Because Marin's super neurotic, but he didn't actually care that much, I felt like, when
Well,
Gallagher
I think he
left.
Was pushing him, so he was, like, that's expecting true. It.
I never listened to that. What was he, what did he Gallagher about?
He was asking him about his, like, racist jokes and, like, his conservative views.
That's why I'm going to Gallagher if you ask me about that stuff. Well, I'm out.
You said very specifically your racism is off the table.
Wow.
Well, it's on if you're praising it.
Well, I love your racism.
I said criticism of my racism is off the table.
Mm-hmm.
Agreement and, you know, respecting me as a maverick.
That's always okay. Sean, is that pen working out or do you want to borrow my Cinderella pen?
Dude, what does it look like?
It's made in Taiwan. If
okay, I'm ready to go when you guys are.
I know, we're doing the cold open. Sean.
No, this isn't the cold open.
What
I have
mean?
A premise. I have an actual
oh,
premise.
You have a premise for the cold open. Okay.
Now,
organic.
I have a...
Yeah,
I
this
have,
is the opposite of a cold open.
I have an announcement to make.
No. Oh, God.
It's kind of sad. I can't do this podcast anymore. I can't. It's too nerdy.
Okay.
I have to stop. I mean, I know that everyone wants this podcast to keep going, but I keep coming in and I'm like, it's too nerdy. What am I doing? Who am I speaking to? What exactly am I? Is this for naught? What am I doing? What do you think about that, Nicole?
I respect that, Sean. I think it's okay. You're volunteering your time, so if it doesn't feel like a good fit for you, you shouldn't do it.
I'll tell you what. If the listeners go to iTunes and leave comments and reviews begging me to stay, you know, maybe I'll continue. You know, you guys got to prove to me you need me to keep doing this because... This is so, it is hard for me.
I hate this for two reasons. I hate it the most for having been premeditated and for having cut off another conversation to do it.
Right.
It's a premise.
No, it's not a premise.
And that is a long form conversation. Recorded at UCB Comedy Studios in New York City. This is the Long Form Conversations Podcast with your hosts, Sean Diston and Nicole Dresbell.
What a premise is.
Listen, we'll have the premise talk another time. Hello, folks. Welcome to the UCB Long Form Conversation Podcast. My name is Sean Diston, and I'm here with the lovely Nicole Dresbell.
Hi, Sean.
Hi. Guys, we are here with an amazing guest. One of the funniest people I've experienced at the theater from the early days when I showed up. You've always been a staple here in sketch and in improv. Ladies and gentlemen, Caitlin Bitsagai.
Hi. Hello. Thank you.
All right. Wow.
The in-studio audience.
The in-studio audience. Guys, it's pronounced Bitsagai.
Mm-hmm. Rhymes with it's a guy.
It's a guy. Bitsagai. Very simple. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm doing good. I am nervous.
All right. But that's fine.
Yeah, it is.
You don't have to be.
You do your own podcast, though. Are you nervous for that ever?
No.
What are you nervous about?
Everyone's going to hear this.
Right.
Yeah.
And people talk about it. Unlike everything else I do.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
I guess people don't go around just talking about their favorite comedy podcast, but your podcast is what? Can you tell us what it is?
Oh, So You're Going Through a Breakup.
So You're Going Through a Breakup with you and co-host
Timothy Dunn. Yeah.
And on another one of the UCB comedy podcasts. We'll be, you know, advertising those every once in a while.
We're network friends.
We're
and
network
family.
Friends.
Mm-hmm. We're going to do Battle the Network Stars.
That's going to be fun.
Which is, yeah, look for that, listeners. It's coming up.
Does
coming
that mean
up in
we'd,
December.
Does that mean we'd be on the same team because we're on the same network?
Well, there
is a battle.
The different podcasts will split up into different teams. So maybe Sean and I are on a team. You
right.
and Tim are on a team.
Right. It's like
and then
an
Diana's
all-star
on our
weekend.
Team. Murph's on your team. And it's like...
Okay, I'm like not to be a bitch, but like my team is not making it really far.
Well,
your team is Murph. Tim
and
you.
Me
and you just have so much fun.
It'll be fun. Yeah,
yeah,
it will be the more
will
fun
be more
team
fun.
We'll be the more fun team.
So Caitlin, I always start from my experience. You've been around the theater for a while. How long
mm-hmm.
has it been?
I started class on October 16th, 2006.
Okay, so before we get into class, we
did
always like to...
Did you have to look that up, or did you know?
That's my phone, probably. Sorry. We'll edit that out.
I knew that.
I'm a professional.
Didn't look it up.
You did know that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before we get into this first wonderful class, we like to start all of our interviews the same way. Nicole?
Caitlin, before you took your first improv class, who were you, where were you, and what were you doing? I just realized in asking that, I assumed you took an improv class first, but what did you take first?
I did.
It was improv. Oh, mm-hmm. I would have assumed the opposite, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The opposite.
I would have assumed the opposite.
I was a grad student pursuing English PhD at Rutgers University in New Brunswick.
I did not know this.
I was teaching writing to freshmen there. Academic writing. And
what is that?
How to write a paper.
Got it.
How to write a research paper. Mm-hmm. Sort of. Not. We didn't get too much into research. I only taught 101. So I was in my... When I started classes, it was my second year in that program. And I first heard of UCB because of another student in that program named Craig Iturby. Hello, if you're listening. My senior year of college, 2005, we had like a visit to Rutgers to mm-hmm. like see if you like it or whatever. And Craig Iturby was there and he told me at one of these dinners that he did improv at UCB. And I thought, horrible. I never want to go see you do that. What a nightmare.
You had never seen improv before. Other than like
half
weird short
of a college show.
Was that sarcastic? Did you really think that sounds awful?
I thought, I immediately thought, how do I get out of him ever inviting me to the show?
Wow.
I didn't get out of it. So what happened then is the next year, so I went to grad school and I was very young. I was 22 when I started. I'd say most people were probably like 27.
Mm-hmm. Child genius.
Yes. And had a life and had already like experienced things and perhaps knew better whether they wanted to enter grad school. All of which I would recommend because I really, really hated it. I was like desperately, desperately unhappy. I was the first year I lived in Highland Park, New Jersey by myself.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty sad. Living in New Jersey by yourself. I don't know. It probably isn't that sad, but it sounds sad.
I think a lot of places it's fine. I would say like an Orthodox Jewish community isn't necessarily like the first place you should move if you're like, you know, 22 and by yourself and it's your first year out of college or out of your home state. I don't know, guys. Maybe I'm wrong. Mm. So Craig wanted to go see a show. So he organized some people to go see Mother. Which at that point I was super excited to do because I was like you know, grad students don't actually like hang out a lot.
Right. Like, so you're like, you guys want to go do something? That
exactly,
sounds cool. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Instead of like just watching Girls Next Door by myself, which I love. But
is that the Hugh Hefner?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even register. That's what we were talking
about. It's Hugh Hefner's girlfriend.
Yep.
Anyway. So that's fun, mm-hmm. but you can watch that later. Let's go to this show. And I think we went to Trailer Park for dinner beforehand, which is funny because I had only, like, I went there like 3 months ago and I think it was the first time since that time.
Interesting.
Same menu. And I went to see Mother. It was the first show that I saw, the soundtrack.
Mm. And your first general, were you just immediately like, this is amazing?
It's so weird. I don't remember that much about the show itself, other than Jason Mantzoukas was like, effectively hosted it, even though improv shows don't have hosts.
Right,
but
right.
Mother did, and Jason mm-hmm. Mantzoukas was it. I guess, like, you know, RuPaul says, you gotta find your tribe.
Here we go.
And that was it. That was just, I was like, oh, I'm here now. Like, this is my place. This is where I'm supposed to be. As we were leaving, I look at all the photos and I, like, touch them. I was like, here I am.
Interesting.
I'm here.
This from a person whose first reaction when they heard about it was, how can I never go?
Yes.
Had you had interest in doing or writing comedy before that?
I think in the back of my mind, yes, but It never really seemed like an option. I mean, there were comedy groups at my college, but it just didn't feel, it was like, I just didn't get it. There was no pathway, you know, that seemed obvious mm-hmm. to me. And I didn't know anyone in the entertainment industry.
And so you showed up to this physical theater that yes. was like, this exists.
Was yes. part of that being in Indiana?
Yes, though, I mean, I've heard since that IU has good improv teams. And, like, a lot of the Chicago improvisers went to IU. So clearly there was, like, a lot that
something
I just,
there.
There was a blind spot.
Right.
That I didn't know that existed.
What did you think you were going to do with that English PhD?
Teaching college.
Okay.
Yeah. Though I never wanted to.
You were just doing it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was just like, here's what's next. And I got in with like the, what's it called? Not called a scholarship, but funding. Mm-hmm. So they were paying me to do it. So I was like, okay. But I mean, I remember taking an aptitude test in college and I like wasn't, I had no aptitude. Like I hid the piece of paper from other people.
So shouldn't you have known that that meant sketch writer?
Yes, but I didn't know anyone.
What the hell does it mean to not have any
aptitude? Seriously, I saw other people's and they had like higher percentages. I like hid mine. I was like, it almost came back like no.
Whoa. So you failed an aptitude test.
Basically.
Oh my God.
And I just didn't, you know, other people had things that they were gunning to be in medical school or acting. I mean, I knew people that wanted to be actors that were theater majors. I just didn't have a thing. And that was like the difference on that day really was I was like, oh, I think I do have a thing. I think this is the thing, mm-hmm. even though I hadn't done it.
I mean, there have been lots of those experiences, I think.
So was it then another year before you took an improv class?
I don't even think it was a full year. I think that was probably, I don't know the exact date of seeing that mother show. I'm going to say it was like January, February 2006, okay. And I started in October. Yeah.
Who was your 101 teacher?
Betsy Stover.
Ah, the quintessential 101 teacher.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. She and Ari probably taught 1,000 101s.
Oh, and this was sure. right in their moment of teaching.
When
yeah,
they were teaching a bunch, right?
Yeah. And I remember Matt Mayer was in Ari's class at the time, and he like subbed into one of our classes, mm-hmm. you know, made up a class, mm-hmm. I guess. Is that yeah, what they call yeah. it? And I was like, oh my God, he's so good.
Well, Matt, a friend of the show, we've had him on.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, he had that college experience. If you want to listen to that, go back and remember, you know, leave comments, whatever.
Yeah. And then I remember seeing his class show was right before mine. So I just showed up to the theater mm-hmm. early and it was like, yeah, him and Brett White, I think Katie Healy, mm-hmm. where's his?
They were all in it.
Yeah. They're all noticeable. I mean,
did
I
you?
Remember seeing
so
them.
You showed up being like, I want to do improv. I want to be able to perform improv. Was there anything past that, or was it just like, I'm going to start taking improv classes?
It was both. I mean, it was definitely like, let's see if this works.
Right.
But really hoping it worked. Like I had my eggs in the basket.
When did you quit your PhD program?
Had I?
Or finish it?
I felt like I would know.
It would have been that next summer. The next summer.
So how many years in were you at that point? 2 years?
To the PhD program, yes.
Yeah, yes. Interesting. When did you start taking sketch classes?
January of 2007.
Gotcha.
So pretty closely after
yes.
improv.
Yeah, took them basically the same time, though a sketch program such that it is now didn't totally exist.
Right.
There was 101 and 201.
Who was your 101?
Charlie Sanders.
All right.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
And
Sarah Chase was in that class.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that how you met Sarah Chase?
Mm-hmm. It is.
TV Sarah Chase?
TV Sarah Chase.
I don't know
Chase.
Who that is.
She plays Cindy on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh, great.
And has also been on Broadway.
Yeah.
Name drop.
Mm-hmm. Name drop that you have to explain. That's
that someone has to explain. But you can drop it. I'll drop it later. We talked about
Do
Sarah
it.
Chase. So what was your first impression in this class as far as your own ability in improv? Did you feel like you were getting it? Had you performed ever before? And was this a brand new thing?
Let's see. Some sort of old lady in an eighth grade play. So then
okay,
about,
that's something.
You know, I don't think I was very good. And then this was like 10 years. I don't know. I didn't think I was like great, but I just thought I'm doing it.
Right.
Like I'm not. quitting, or I'm not like, I'm just putting myself into this. I thought I was like proud of. Mm-hmm. And like I did Hotspot. Like that was hard to just come in and like you're a normal person and then you're singing in a circle.
That's
we take for granted that's extremely weird.
We do that exercise and kind of throw it away in the back of our head. But in front of us, people are having these moments of like, I can't believe I just did that.
Yeah.
Like it's a fucking crazy exercise.
No, because I kind of remember when Betsy explained it, and then I was like, oh, I'm going to end up going last, or I'm going to, like, and then I was like, no, just go. Just, like, step in and, like, just do it. And then I did it, and I was, like, pretty proud.
I feel like, this is a generalization, and I'll continue to analyze it as we speak to you, but I feel like you're a person who, if you want to do something, you can, like, set up a way to accomplish it, like, in a technical way almost. Like, I mean by that is like the getting over like not stepping out is not like getting over your fears. It was like, no, just do it now. Like, you get out there so quickly.
May I interject on your behalf?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. I think you're just a person who doesn't think that an emotional problem is an excuse to not do something.
Right.
I think you're very matter of fact
about
that.
True.
Yeah. That's
interesting.
True too.
So I'm interpreting it as a different thing.
I don't know that either of you is wrong. I mean,
because I'll say my impression is this. I showed up in 2008,
right,
which is what, 2 years after you started? Mm-hmm. And when I showed up, the impression of what I got from you was, oh, this is a person who had been around for years and years, and you're already doing shows. And like, it just seemed like, I don't know, in the way that you probably got into grad school super early, you just kind of were like, I'm going to tackle this now without even really. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's definitely not a lot of thought on some level. Like, there's not a lot of, I don't hem on haw,
right,
really,
yeah,
at all, about almost anything.
Yeah, I think you just, like, get it, you just figure it out and move past it.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. And I don't really like deliberation in general.
Interesting. Well, what were you saying, Nicole?
I was going to say, so talking about impressions, I want to jump right into this. So you started Sketch pretty soon after starting improv, mm-hmm, which in 2007 was, I think, especially rare. I think they were kind of separate worlds for the most part, or at least it felt like people did one track and then maybe they went back and did another track.
I don't know.
I will say that there is an element of people who were a little too afraid to start with improv and would start with Sketch and vice versa. Like someone who's like, I don't know if I'm a writer, but I can go. So like, I remember I showed up to UCB being like, I want to write comedy. I want to take the sketch classes. Mm-hmm. But I took improv first because I was like, that's probably going to be easier for whatever reason. So
I'm thinking of who was in my... I do maybe agree with you. In my Sketch 101, I felt like the other students were either farther along in improv than mm-hmm I was, like Sarah Chase. David White was in my Sketch 101. Or they were complete lunatics, never to be seen again.
Really? So it wasn't even like there were some like, these are real writers. It was either further along in improv or nut jobs.
I don't think this person is listening because I don't think they have iTunes. But
here we go.
I have a file still in my filing cabinet labeled with this co-student's everything I know about them. Like, I wrote a list of everything I knew about them from 101. Then they took my 201. And I have, like, some of their... No, not what I taught. Yeah, we were just co-students. They were off the wall. They were crazy people. They were just street people.
Is this the student who brought in a sketch about your sketch class?
Yes.
Or is that... Okay.
Classic.
Can you tell that story? I love this story.
I mean... All right,
so...
Yeah, I guess so.
So I took Sketch 101 with this person, who's a woman. We'll give away her gender. I don't think you'll be able to find her from that, but, you know, kids today. Snapchat. So she was in my 101, and she was a straight-up lunatic, but I love Charlie Sanders, period, and as a teacher, and I still, if I have a student that's slightly off, they're never street people like the way they were before. Mm-hmm. I always think about how Charlie dealt with this person, because it was like... He'd just always be like, yep. Like, he wouldn't really give notes. He'd just be like, okay. Because that's all you can say. There's nothing else to say. There's no need to point it out.
Right.
I wish I brought this file in. Because
oh,
I have forgotten some
God
of these facts, but they're kind of coming back to me. Well, one time in Sketch 101, she wore her T-shirt, like, up around her eyeballs because she then did it for the whole class because she said she's allergic to perfume and someone was wearing it. She wore sunglasses inside all the time.
Was she like sleeping?
100%. This woman was a vampire.
Okay. She might have been a vampire.
And another person, another crazy woman who was in my sketch 101, brought in. She like didn't do the assignment, but was like, can I just show you guys this DVD? Of me.
Of her?
And my burlesque show.
Oh, my God.
And Sanders is like, whatever.
So you guys watched it?
So we watch it. It's really not of her burlesque show. It's just more of her topless.
What?
And a dog lips licks her boobs.
Honestly, the most surprising part of that story is that the DVD was worked in 2007.
It might have been a VHS. To be honest, I don't remember for sure.
Wait a minute.
So that's Sketch 101 in 2007. Is the second craziest woman brings in a DVD of her getting her boobs licked.
Well, I think it probably was like that because like the program was less proven, right?
Yeah, and I think these older lunatics... really loved like old SNL and old SCTV, so they wanted to do that. That's what they wanted to be a part of versus live improv shows.
You don't see these kinds of students at all anymore?
No, they're gone.
Oh man.
So this isn't the crazy part yet. But the crazy student that I'm speaking of, shit, that really pissed her off. Like, it was so funny. Though I look back and I'm like, that is sexually inappropriate material
it
in
is,
a class.
It is.
Wait, but crazy number one was pissed off by crazy number two?
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
She out-crazied
her. And I think she was the person that wore perfume that led to the t-shirt around the eyeballs the entire time. This woman wore a leather jacket that I'm extremely jealous of that was a Xena warrior princess. That's it. This podcast is just going to be describing this woman now, and I'm fine with it. I'm now no longer nervous. I'm in my happy
place.
That's
crazy.
So, God damn it. I can't remember the Usenet group where she met her husband.
She met her husband on an internet Usenet group.
But it's something so funny. I'm so angry that I can't remember the specific television show. It'll come to me.
Caitlin, I'll tell you what. When we release this podcast, I want you to, when we post about it, just put in facts, like sprinkle in facts to the, like, Twitter sphere so we can just spread this around.
Okay, and I will have help because in that sketch 201 were a lot of people whose names you'll know.
Oh, name drop.
Oh, a little Frank Garcia Hill.
Woo!
A little Allison Bennett.
Gotta believe it.
CeCe Leader.
Oh my God.
John Frusciante.
Gotta love him.
Okay.
That was a stacked class.
That was a stacked class.
And then there were other people that were like pretty involved at the time. So we were all like friends, like sketch 201 friends, and I can't. Oh, why did CeCe piss off this woman? CeCe sent an email that was not BCC'd.
Oh, yes.
That'll do it.
And it was to like 70 people. And it was, I don't know, I think inviting to a stand-up show. No idea. It doesn't matter. The next class is the crazy woman brings in a conversation between her. Well, I shouldn't say her. A first name that rhymes with her own,
mm-hmm.
and a first name that rhymes with her husband's. And it's a conversation back and forth. These are not properly formatted. I think I don't have to say that, right? They're all like...
It's just like a Word document.
Aligned left. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. It's like when your computer has like the test page it prints out is what this woman's sketches look like. I have it. I have it. Don't worry. You, think
you kept your copies?
Oh, I got this sketch. Because, and it's all about how CeCe was so rude in sending out an un-BCC'd email. Her name is CeCe, too, which is like a great fun thing for any comedy writer that wants to tackle the topic of CeCe not BCCing.
Yeah,
but I don't think she cashed
in
on that.
Joke.
I don't think she cashed in.
Didn't even make the joke.
But then it also like had other grievances with the class. About how, like, we never wanted to go over to her house, even though there's a balcony where smokers can smoke.
Wait, okay. So she then goes through and then starts, like, talking shit about everyone in the class. And you guys are reading this out loud?
Yes. Well, she reads the part of her part, the person who's... And I believe Mary Traina had to read the part of the the husband, and God bless her for getting through it. And then at the end, I mean, what a great moment. What a moment our students will never get.
Yeah,
like that.
Crazy.
Just like, wow.
How was this? This was the Delaney class, right? Mm-hmm. How did Delaney handle it?
I think.
What were his notes?
Well, this person had already been, you know, an issue. Wait, another part of the sketch is that it's okay. Her niece had the same problem with BCCing at one point, but she explained it to her niece, and her niece gets it now.
These are good jokes for that, if that's the premise.
Who's still? Frank and I should do a staging of this sketch actually at UCB soon.
I think I would watch it.
He was like, I mean, he had not been on any of the emails, but he knew that something was awry. She was an interesting person because you could talk about it in front of her, like in front of her face. You could talk about how weird her behavior had been, and it didn't like sink in. I remember Cece was pretty pissed. I mean, it sucked.
Yeah, that's
sucks
crazy.
To have a sketch written about you. It was hilarious. I would say his response was appropriate and hilarious.
I couldn't imagine how to respond to that other than
I'll have to ask Frank. I think maybe this person was removed from the class after that.
That's the story I heard.
Jesus Christ.
I think she was.
Well.
Never to be seen again.
So then I guess my next question
that's the sketch program in 2007.
But, yeah. So I guess right. My question would be, what did you first sort of think, okay, this is what I need to focus on? Did you focus more on sketch? Was there a moment where you did that or?
I was doing them both like pretty equally. Mm-hmm. But I got on Mod Night in I think March of 2008.
Right.
So then that drew my focus. Mm-hmm.
Had you put up a Spank or a show before
I had,
then?
Actually, Sarah Chase and I had put up a Spank
right.
together.
Which show was this?
What was it called? It did not get a run.
Didn't get a run.
Was this directed by Neil? It was like
No. No, it was called Top That. It didn't really have a director. We also, like, in 2007, you could just get a Spank.
It's true.
Just Caitlin anything. Is exposing the difference between the 2007 years.
Because the fact that we got, I mean, I was just so confident that we were getting a run. I mean, I was just like, I mean, how could we not? After all, we've taken 101 and 201.
Of sketch.
What
yeah,
was
yeah,
the
yeah.
show about? Nothing. Random sketches.
Mm-hmm.
Some of which,
you
know,
were
fine.
That or something
nope.
about topping that?
Nope. No. No, we had a sketch called Top That that got cut, but keep the title.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And you did not have a director?
We had someone help us that was like in an improv class that I had, but not in the sense of like a sketch director. Like someone blocked it.
Right. Hmm. Do you think that you picked up sketch? Do you think you picked up game quickly? Was that something that you understood?
Yeah,
right.
Totally. Totally. It felt like something I already knew.
Yes. Interesting.
You know, being told back to me.
Even in improv?
Yeah, for sure. I wasn't as good at it as like, you know, doing it in
but
improv.
But you could write.
But I for sure understood what was going on.
So I feel like pretty quickly around that time, you get on Mod, and then there was a while where the joke at the theater was that every show was written or directed by you.
Yeah.
Because you got runs pretty quickly, multiple shows sometimes. Do you feel like you got pigeonholed into being a sketch person more than an improv person?
No, I mean, yes, but that, I mean, that made sense. I mean, I was doing so much sketch stuff, and then I kind of took a break from doing improv for like a year. So yes, but
it was true.
What other conclusion would people draw?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. I wasn't sure if that was people drawing conclusions. I didn't know that you actually had taken a break.
I took a break for a little bit. I did. So I went, I like powered through the classes. And that really why I took sketch, I mean, I wanted to write. I thought having come from an academic writing background, that would make sense. But I just kind of wanted to take everything at UCB. Like, yeah. I just wanted to be there all the time.
Right. And you did. You interned Wednesday nights at the
mm-hmm.
office.
You know it.
Front desk intern.
Front desk intern. Remember those?
All right. Well,
no one's there in charge but one intern. What could go wrong?
Idea, especially on weekends.
What could go wrong but everything?
I'm pretty sure one of the first times I showed up to the training center, mm-hmm. the elevator door opened and there was not one person in there. And I walked around and I looked around. And I was like, what is going on? They just got on the elevator and left.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
don't remember,
before
but I have no idea. But it was for sure empty.
It was definitely not a Wednesday or a Saturday.
No, it was.
Wednesdays were guarded. Thank you.
It was like a weekday. I mean, it was during the day.
Okay, so that sounds like Shannon Coffey's fault.
I mean, let's do it.
Call Shannon Coffey.
So you did take a break from improv. When did you make the conscious decision to go back? Or was it a conscious decision? Or how did you end up taking improv?
So I took all the classes through 501.
Oh, right. We were talking about that.
What?
We were talking about that.
Oh, yeah.
501, the In a World 600?
I did take that, yes. Wait, what did I? Okay. I took 501 with Gethard and then 501 with Anthony King and then I think In a World with Shannon.
Because that would have been the end of 2008.
And then...
Were you auditioning at this time at all? Did you audition?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I auditioned. I got, was it 2008? I got a callback, which was amazing. It just mm-hmm. felt like, wow. I didn't expect to get a callback at all. And then I was in an infamous callback that has been mentioned in the long form conversations previously by Tim Martin as one of the worst experiences of all time.
Oh, I don't remember that.
It's me, Paul Welsh, Johnny McNulty, Anna Rubinova, Benjamin Raheeb. Is that how you say his last
Raheeb,
name?
Raheeb. It was bad.
This must have been spring 2008, maybe?
So bad. It was so bad, you guys. I mean, I didn't...
Or maybe spring 2009?
Eight, I think. Eight. That's right. It was so bad. Tim already told the story of, how he was, shooting someone in a scene and then was like, they're only 2 feet away. Like, a bad... Yeah. Mm-hmm, and stuff like that was constant. It was...
And you just
horrible.
Couldn't help but do it.
It felt done from
the get-go. I mean,
that's a get-go.
Stacked group. That's it's so funny.
From the get-go.
And nobody it was just... everyone kind of just...
We were also the last group, and I think that they just, started deliberating in their minds about other people that they'd seen earlier in the day at that point.
You guys were bad.
Yeah, but I thought that was, super embarrassing and stupid, but I was so glad to get a call back.
But you weren't a person
much.
That were, not getting on and being devastated by it.
Not that year. Because I got a callback and I never auditioned before. So that seems almost best possible scenario, really.
Right.
Because getting on right away can also
can be
a bad news bears. So I felt good about that. Yeah, I did In a World with Shannon and a bunch of other good people. I don't remember that much about those shows or what it was.
I mean, probably at that time you were just probably doing so much. So much mod, so much
sketch,
so
and it
much
was,
improv.
Yeah. And again, it was I didn't really, deliberate. It was just oh, Shannon's teaching 600. Great. That's what I should do. It had nothing to do with the form or it was here's another thing.
Yeah.
And then I did mono scene with Curtis Quinn the next. And that was good, too.
And you took the break after that.
Yeah, because to be honest, I auditioned again and I didn't get a call back.
Right.
And that was devastating, actually.
Right. To totally. Feel like you were
because it feels regressing. Like a step back.
Yeah.
It does. Whether it is or not is highly suspect, but it felt that way. I didn't feel like I was getting better. And I had been on an indie team for a year with Kevin DeBecker and Dan Klein. And Dan got on and it sort of felt like...
Yeah, that's a terrible feeling.
I thought Dan was a lot better than me. That part made sense, but it was just if I'm not there, then what am I doing?
What was the name of that team?
Pump It Up.
It was Pump It Up. Okay, great. And why did you come out with backpacks on?
Style choice.
Woo! Gotta love those classic indie team style choices.
And you were coached by Chelsea Clark.
Uh-huh.
And you guys did organic transitions, flocking mm-hmm. transitions between scenes.
Mm-hmm. We practiced, I'm going to say 50 times and performed 3.
Wow.
Gotta love it.
So dedicated.
But I saw a third of those shows.
You were at the very first indie show I ever did.
Wow.
Yeah. Under St. Mark's. Pump It Up.
Wow. Were you also working at this time? Because you're saying you're doing so much UCB stuff. Are you, how are you?
In 2009, I started writing on shows. Yeah.
We did the ESPN pilot thing with Rowan.
9 to 10, yeah.
And then you and had various other jobs here and there.
Yeah.
And was that, did that make it easy to continue doing stuff, or were you just too busy to do as much as you were doing? Because you didn't quit mod after you were doing that stuff, right?
No. Yeah, they weren't like exhaustive writing jobs. They weren't like...
22 episodes.
Right, they weren't like Friends 1996. It was just like, you know, work 9 to 5 at this thing and go.
The first season of Friends is your high mark for it?
Well, just they probably had a lot to write.
They famously worked a lot.
Okay.
They worked till like 3 a.m.
Duh, Nicole.
Yeah, famously.
Well, just for those of us in the industry. Continue.
So
you're a monster.
So when you were in the industry,
I've censored time.
What I'm saying is like at that time, and Nicole was hinting at it, you were very prolific. And people knew you as a prolific writer. You had a lot of things going, web series.
Let's talk about some of those shows. Waiting for Obama. Mm-hmm.
Waiting for Obama. That's where there's a bunch of presidents, right? That one was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't there one where...
Sean's reviews. Lots of presidents, really good.
Yeah, it's really good. Then there was one where it was like something about the 90s. Remember the 90s with Tim and Darcy, right? Really good. Gotta love it.
It was called...
Oh, thank God. You can't remember either.
It was called Remember the 90s.
No, it
wasn't. Oh, it was called something else. Yes, you're right. I don't remember.
It was a joke title.
You're supposed to do all the research on these shows.
I'm supposed to just have recall. Tim and Darcy...
Were you
blank the 90s.
Recall the 90s.
No. It's funnier. It's definitely funny.
It's something
when anyone remembers, it's super funny.
Were you in Smith? No?
Directed.
I directed.
And you directed a ton of shows, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you the names of all these.
Little show called Imaginary Bravery, which got a spank.
Definitely got a spank.
It was a show Abby Jacobson and I wrote that.
Ooh, I remember when you guys were doing that. Yep. Lots of props, lots of cutouts.
It was lots of props.
It was a very beautiful show.
There were several times that we referred to it as prop comedy.
I remember that.
Yeah.
But did you feel that at the time, or was this just your normal work ethic and you just were, like, did you feel like you were pushing yourself very hard?
No. I mean, I not really.
Yeah.
Like, once you decide to do these things, they just keep going.
Yeah.
Like, you don't make, you do make the choice every day, I guess, to get up and do it again, but you don't.
To me, though, that sounds like the rational opinion of Caitlin. That the person that I know that is that kind of person. Because I think a lot of people have trouble deciding to do something and then the follow through. I think you're a person who has extreme follow through.
Well, I would say, you know, commit to other people. And if they are expecting you to do it, I think you have to do it.
Yeah.
You make that sound so matter of fact. And I think for...
It has to be, though. I mean, I think if you fail once, you'll probably fail 10 times because, like, it is easy to let people down, actually, and they probably will forgive you.
I think it's
once you get over it the first time, you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a lot of transgressions people experience, and a lot of I think you do have to hold yourself to that high of a standard, else you won't.
I also think it's a very forgiving community. I think we kind of talk a big talk about showing up and commitment, but like we are pretty lax about each other as well as ourselves.
I agree with that, and I don't tend to work with people that I feel like have let me down again.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Well, I don't. It's not worth my time. I mean,
she's never asked me to do anything.
Never, and I wouldn't.
Since the ESPN pilot, but
yeah,
that's okay.
Sure. We played Love Interest, by the way.
Oh, we did.
Oh, did you?
It was a weird pilot.
You can still feel it.
I'm not feeling anything.
There was extreme chemistry.
I think, again, in talking about Caitlin's refusal to be emotional, I also think a lot of people, and maybe I shouldn't say a lot of people, but I know myself, like the second I had two shows running at the same time, I would be the biggest martyr. It would be all anybody would hear about is how overworked I was and four shows a month and all the promotions. And I think that's also like just not something that you truck
with. Well, the promotions are terrible.
That's why you get people like Tim, Dunn, and Darcy to be in your show.
That's
so
true.
That they promote you just... sit on the sideline, collect the checks.
I don't know. Maybe it's just like a Midwestern thing.
It's that Larry Bird attitude, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you just gotta, you have to ask yourself, or I feel like I do, how I can add value to the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to do that and not anything else. I fail at that, but I think that's largely what I'm looking to do.
So... at that time, you're prolifically writing a lot of stuff. You are working, you know, starting to like feel like you're getting some traction in the industry, as you were saying earlier. What was the decision to come back to improv? Because that is an interesting one. What is the benefit of going back? Did you miss it? I mean, there is a benefit, but I'm asking.
No, it is a funny question, though.
All my questions are funny.
I'm Gallaghering. I'm out.
She's Gallaghering.
I wondered if I could get better. That was really it. I thought that I had like at least a year of stagnation when I'd taken a break, which was probably end of 2009-ish is when I took a break. And then I took a class January of 2011. I probably did some, like people asked me to do a kaleidoscope, I'd do it.
Yeah.
But like not really taking classes or practicing regularly with a group. I wondered if I could get better. I wondered if, I never thought of myself as defensive and I never batted down notes verbally, but I wondered if before I had been more guarded than I thought I was, and if I could grow more.
Yeah. And so was part of it being sort of still attached to the UCB and like seeing a bunch of the people you work with doing improv and like them talking about it and the fun of it, or was it just your memory and wanting to go back?
Just wanting to go back.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel like left out. And in fact, I thought that was a good part of it, is that I didn't feel like it wasn't about that for me at that point. It wasn't about socially keeping up, because people I had started classes with and people that had started 2 years after me at that point were on Herald Night. So I didn't,
right.
I hadn't kept up. That part was over. So it was about something else now. You know, that was removed. To the extent it can never fully be removed, but
right.
More so.
What was the January 2011 class?
Kevin Hines. Was this called 501 or Advanced at that point? I am not sure.
Probably still 501 because it's at the old...
I think it was called 501.
And was this sort of the foundations of like the Gadget Crew?
Mm-hmm.
That was
and
all
Code
like
Red.
Yeah. Right, Code
yeah.
Red.
Right. That was a... great class. And I didn't feel better right away, but I did feel like I was having more fun doing it. And I thought I was listening to Kevin harder than I'd. And something I just learned from teaching was all the notes are for you.
Yeah.
All the notes are for you.
Not just the ones that are to
Not
you.
Not just the ones
yes,
that are to you.
They're all for you.
Yeah.
They're all there for you to listen to.
Yep.
That's and if a you, profound statement, because I don't know if that's been kind of explicitly said, but that's 100% right.
It is. And I wonder if, yeah, we don't say it. And then I know I get annoyed when people aren't paying attention when the notes
Other
aren't for
Other people
them.
Are getting
I,
notes.
I'm
so
not
true.
A huge fan of personal notes. I do think people turn
oh,
off
yeah.
their brains when
yeah.
they're when it's not about them. And they would love a positive note. Second, they'll take a super negative note. And
yes.
third.
Oh, but a constructive note? No, thank you.
Yeah, or just like something general that you have to be reminded of, like have
yeah,
a philosophy.
I know that.
It's
I
like
know that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's so
funny. So I felt like I got a lot better just in that class because
as far as taking notes and having fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was a really, really good class.
It is interesting. Teaching does change being a student.
Yep. Yep.
You're damn right.
So when did you get on a team? That would have been June 2011, so pretty soon after, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that team was?
American Cousin.
Formerly Woo! Ragnarok. You were part of the transition into American Cousin.
Yeah. Yeah,
how
one could say that.
Was this through an audition?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you got a callback, went through the callback, then got on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you, at that time, feel a lot different than the other auditions, or was it just like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I guess I did. I felt like I had a chance, and I thought I was being more reasonable about that than probably other years that I had auditioned. So, yeah, Anthony calls, which was amazing.
That's a great experience.
That was great.
Right?
That is everything people think it's going to be.
It
now,
is,
being
yeah,
on the team,
yeah.
that could be different, but.
You're totally right.
That.
Getting
especially
the phone call.
Like it's probably whatever AD you think of as AD,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
the one who called you,
calling you.
I've
is...
been called by all three.
Jesus, I've been hung crazy? Up on like, all of them.
They all hung up on me, but they definitely called me. They said, and I've been called for good and bad
reasons.
They
said, don't call me at this number. that was awesome. And he said that I was getting added to Ragnarok, which was...
Because they were already an established, really good team.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Which was an amazing feeling. And then it was only kind of true.
Because why was it?
Well, people had been moved. I already knew. I was like, but there's 8 people on that team.
Yeah. So you're like, there's some movement going on.
Yeah. There. So 2 people had moved away from the team.
Did Winston and Emily.
Winston moved to Grandma's Ashes and Emily moved to Airwolf.
Got it.
And then it was like, and you have to change your name. And Dave Siegel and I were added. Right. I don't know. One thing also that's funny to me about UCB or like thinking about the tenure of it is like I feel like every experience that you have, at least for me, you'll end up being on the other side of it if you're around long enough. Because I've never talked to anyone on American Cousin about this, so I'm not sure what they're feeling.
Interesting.
But my read on them at the time is that they were so heartbroken that Ragnarok...
Oh, had been broken up.
It wasn't really going to be Ragnarok anymore.
Yeah.
That they couldn't...
I think I remember that even being a feeling in the community.
I think so.
When they kind of were like, oh man, Ragnarok broke up. And I think even the community kind of probably fueled it for some of the players too. They probably all felt it.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think they did. I think they were very sad. Again... I could be completely wrong, but I've not talked to them about this.
That also makes sense because there are some people on that team who hadn't been on Ragnarok that long. Like, I think there were some original members of Ragnarok who were like, maybe ready to move on. But a lot of the people on that team.
Wasn't it just the same crew?
No,
though?
No, Mujan was on it.
Mujan right.
And Josh Patton, who wasn't.
Right. Though Josh Patton had been on it for a while.
Had it been a while?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess so because they've been like a year since the Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And that was the rest of it original Ragnarok?
Mm-hmm. And Dave Siegel.
Right.
So I guess actually only 4 original. Josh, who'd been on there for quite a while.
Right.
And then Mujan
who'd only been there for like
do
a
you
month.
Think,
yeah, she was short.
So is that what you felt? Did you feel like it was not... How did that manifest itself? Was it... Were shows tough? Was it just like...
Shows were fine, yeah. Actually. For our quick and sudden demise, I don't think the shows were bad.
Right.
They wanted to always get back to what Ragnarok was doing. Like, that was a goal, improv-wise.
Yeah,
was
right.
Like, well, we're doing this, but we want to get back to this.
This, right.
And, like, just doing, like, warm-ups that were, like, their Ragnarok things.
Right.
And stuff like that.
Oof.
Yeah.
It's strange. I mean, having that feeling, there are a lot of players who get added to teams that are already existing, or there have been shakeups, and it's like, all right, now this, you know, just recently there was sort of a The Enemy to Slam Ball kind of shake-up. And yeah, that's its own unique situation.
That would be, yeah, more similar probably because we weren't the same team.
Right, right.
So no one was consciously like including us because it was all a new team.
And a lot of those people that were on Ragnarok, that was their only team.
Yes.
And they got to be on it for so long. It was like such
yes, at the time.
Like
the 4 original members it was.
I do think that is such a good lesson and a good thing to keep in mind when you're on house teams. And it's a hard line to walk because you want to be deeply invested and you want to feel ownership of it. But also, like, you don't own it. You're renting.
Right.
Yep. Well, I think that's why the whole Lloyd team thing is just 1 year and you're one and done, right?
Right.
So
then you don't end up with that heartbreak or that frustration. Okay, so then that lasts 6 months.
Ooh,
then
you wish, girl.
It was 3
Not
months.
Even.
3 months?
No.
So wait, why did it, what was the deal with that?
Shortest person on Herald Night right here.
Yeah.
No fucking
not
way.
Anymore. But
but
at the
I
time,
remember
you
that
better
being,
believe record holder.
Listen, I remember that being so insane because I don't even. It wasn't what was the cause of the breaking up of the team? Was it?
Well, I could not tell you. But
wait, but were there auditions?
Yeah.
Why were there auditions 3 months later?
Well, there was a new artistic director.
That's what it was. It was when
you're right because it was June because I was cut in June. I was cut the audition you got put on for.
Oh. Can I say one thing?
Yes, you can.
Can I say one of my actual best memories of UCB involves that day where I got the phone call from Anthony King and mm-hmm. I go into the training center and like you're fucking king or queen on
yeah,
the day when you get on Herald Night and you're walking around the training center.
Mm-hmm.
But not like I can, Nicole and Sarah Claspel had just both been cut that day and mm-hmm. I can still feel them like running to hug me. Like just over the moon for me. I just
yeah, that's a crazy memory.
But I we didn't talk about it.
Because you guys had worked together.
Yeah, all three of us had, yeah. And I just can't, I mean, as far as RuPaul, I mean, it's just like, you found your tribe. That is one of my best UCB memories. Even though American Cousin, like, didn't go great.
Yeah.
I felt like before I got back on, I thought, was that like just a total waste of time? I would think about that. Like, was that just a total waste of time? And then I would remember that moment and I would think it wasn't.
I remember we talked about that a year later when we met up to talk about getting cut. And I remember you telling me that story, and it at the time hadn't remotely stood out, I think, to Sarah or I at all. Because I think, because you and Kate, you and Lila were the first people I met that I felt a part of, like really a part of at UCB.
We all met in that linen class.
We met in that linen part character class. And I remember being weirded out by how aggressively you wanted to be friends. It felt like, because I was like, this girl is taking advanced study classes. I don't know why she's talking to me. I'm in 201.
Yeah, that's true.
And then Lila and I stayed in touch.
Think about it now. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, if I saw someone in advanced be friends with someone in 201 now, what a creep.
Yeah, I mean, it's right. You'd be slumming it. So there's definitely some angle.
Jesus, this is terrible.
No, but like Lila put me in the first sketch show she ever wrote. You directed the first thing I ever wrote. Like, it was just so not a question, because it was like, well, UCB is like a place, but what UCB gave me was these people that I met.
Yeah.
Well, didn't you also have a class when I interned? Like, I feel like you were there. There was some reason we were around each other physically.
Yeah, that makes sense. That might have been the case.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. But thank you for, I wanted you to tell that story about what a good person I am, so I'm really glad that you did it.
All right, we're going to have to get back to me at some point.
Yep.
But, So 3 months.
I'm Gallaghering.
She's Gallaghering. So it was a new AD, and then it was just, I'm switching up the teams? Was it like an
audition? I can't remember. I mean, Nicole, do you remember, was there auditions?
I think
there was auditions.
Was.
There was invite-only auditions.
That's what it was.
And that was the one that made Deckard. Right.
And like Bluff Band got on.
Sure. It was like a big, no. Bluff Band had already been on for a year.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Baby Bluff
Band got on Dybbuk.
You're right. This made Deckard Creature.
This was the one that was like after parentheses, and a ton of parentheses people got on.
Yes. And a ton of Code Red people did not get on.
Interesting.
We were the down click.
So Code Red was a practice group that started.
Formed out of that.
And
class.
Kevin Hines coached you guys during the day for, I mean, years, right?
I was involved for a full year, and I think it went on maybe 18 more months after that.
Wow.
I had to quit because of work stuff, but, and he eventually quit coaching and just joined it.
Yeah.
And we would do like really weird performances.
I think that's where Convergence came out of, maybe, from working with you guys.
Maybe.
Might have.
But that would be after my time if it maybe. Was, but it's possible. Yes. So we were all depressed.
So 3 months after getting on.
Like,
so,
and I remember it feeling like it it's normally unfair, but it's never, this is an unprecedented level of unfairness.
There's like a buffer time that you at
you
least
you normally
get
a little buffer.
Yeah.
Wait, Lauren Hunter also got a short go of
it. I think it was 6 months,
she
though.
Might have gotten
six. I won't let her take this from me.
That's fair. Oh, right, because she was added to Scooch and then Scooch
I think it was 6 months.
It was not quite three. You, yeah. I think you win.
And even that 6 months was like, that's insane.
Yes.
But 3 months, wow.
And she was added to a team. It wasn't like,
yeah,
she didn't
she
go,
did
like the weird audition to audition
it was
3 months.
Weird, yeah.
I don't know. It was,
That was tough.
It was horrible. I felt horrible. I cried 4 days.
And does it also feel like it undoes that first getting on? Like being so rapid, does it almost feel like it takes that win away from you?
Yeah, completely. I mean, I was devastated.
Yeah.
And I think that
it's got to feel like you didn't even have a chance.
I was devastated for a while.
Yeah.
I would say I was devastated through hoops. I mean, we all were. But, like, I don't think that I... And it did change my relationship with the theater forever. It did.
Yeah.
Because... And I understand choices need to be made and whatever. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't believe all those people in that room who had known me for like 5 years and had seen me work for it really thought that 3 months was fine.
Yeah.
I know there's. I know that if they were here, and there's some nor should they have to answer for it. But I just couldn't get over.
Because
one in there that didn't know me very well, and it.
Yeah. And what you start to make up in your head is probably much worse than the reality of the situation. I mean,
it's tough. And I remember Nate called me, and I just was in shock. And it was just like, I think he said, we'll try to get you back on soon. So, you know, time is different to different people, but.
soon.
That took the wind out of me. It really did. It really did.
It was
bad.
Yeah. You didn't stop writing and performing at the theater after that. You were still doing Mod Night at the time, or had you left Mod Night?
I don't think that I was on Mod Night at that time. I don't think I was on any house teams. That was September of 2011. And then I got married in October of that year, so I don't think I recharged to do.
Yeah, it's life stuff to take care of. So what was this?
What are you wowing on?
Just that time frame. I don't think I realized. Boy, you were great at the wedding. You really bounced back. You couldn't tell at all that you've been recently cut.
Do you think my speech was a little much? It's weird for the bride to give a speech.
It did start with you talking about getting cut and how it's changed your life.
Oh, that's how I knew I'd found the right guy, because
he
stood by. I mean, if you're willing to marry someone once they've been cut.
So, okay.
For richer, for poorer, so, on Harold Knight or cut after 3 months.
So, what was your sort of, how did you get back after that? Because at that point, you'd already taken a break and you had already.
Oh, I was doing Gadget.
Right. That's what kept you going.
So, you were already you had found something that was going to tether you to improv for
yes.
a little bit.
Yep. Yes.
Gadget is great improv team. You guys are hosting a show at Richmond Shepherd Theater and maybe somewhere before that.
For 8 or 9 years, we hosted.
Every week. Great show. That was a nice little, that was a weird time of the improv community where we had Richmond Shepherd Theater.
That's true.
Sort of
and
forged,
he had us.
He had us sort of forged by Gadget having this weekly show.
We did a weekly show.
Right,
that was
crazy.
Another no deliberation zone where I'm could it use some deliberation maybe? Because
every Friday I'm going to decide to do a show.
Because we were all I guess we should do a show. I guess it should be 11 on Fridays. I guess it should be in the weirdest place owned by a mime. Should it be owned by, guys, should it be owned by a mime? It should. Yeah. Okay. Well, then let's do it. Should we get locked out of the first show for 45 minutes? Okay, great. Okay, good. And still do the show? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. A college kid almost dies in front of us. Great.
What?
No, but keep doing it. Keep doing the show. Keep doing the show. Let's
great
do some warm ups. Let's
Indian
do some warm ups.
Hold on. Why did a college kid almost die in front
he
of
showed
me?
Up quite trashed.
Uh huh.
He
was this when you guys had the a cappella group?
I think he was a friend of the a cappella group. And that was one of Gadget's original goals for the Gadget Hours that would have not just improv but also lots of weird stuff, which it did. Then was that all successful? No, most of it wasn't. But we did that. So that was the greatest. Should I say the names? Don't you love it when they say names?
Sure.
People in Gadget?
Yeah.
Will Hines really loved names.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I kind of
are you guys
care.
Fading out?
I'm a
we're
team
facing
guy.
Out names. We're trying to
if you
want to
look it up, go to New York Improv
Can I
teams?
See, can I say all the names and then you guys go stacked?
Got it, got it. Do it, do it, do it, do it.
Yes.
Jocelyn DeBoer.
Wow.
Patrick Noth.
Oh my God. What?
James McCarthy.
McCarthy was on the team?
You Zach it. Phillips?
Shut the fuck up.
Grant O'Brien?
No way.
Jesus Christ.
Are you kidding?
Nick Kocher?
Oh, that guy's almost famous at this point.
And Brian McElhaney.
I mean, same. Oh, wait a minute.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
That was stacked. Jesus.
Yes, I got one.
I mean, cage match. They won cage match.
We did win cage match.
Lots of.
I didn't realize Grant O'Brien was on that team. What a fucking weirdo. I
didn't
love Grant.
He is the team.
He
had to talk to Richmond all the time. I would see Richmond show up in his head to toe white outfits.
I still have a key to Richmond Shepherd Theater. I still have a key.
That's great.
So, Gadget's going on.
Right.
First of all, Lloyd Knight happens, right? This Lloyd Knight thing starts.
Right.
Was you were the first audition for Lloyd Knight?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
That's March or April of 12.
Right. So you're doing Gadget at this time. You're still loving improv. Did you take another class? No?
You would have had to. Oh, maybe not.
Maybe
I didn't
Kevin
then.
Class.
I did once I was on Hoops. I took right. Chelsea's class.
So audition again, going in thinking what?
Here we go again.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean what
that
were
was
you thinking?
That was actually a weird audition, though, remember? Because that was the first you could audition as a team.
Right. So Gadget oh. auditioned as a team.
Not all of no. Gadget because Brian and Nick didn't want to audition because right. I guess like they are, I don't know. Like,
doing their own
some
thing.
Sort of like movie deal or something. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Famous.
And Patrick Noth was already on Mr. Crime.
Right.
So it was the rest of Gadget.
And some co-dread
people. Yeah, Carrie Macross and Eric Gerson and Cassia.
Right.
So would you have done it if it wasn't auditioning as a team,
no.
do you think? There you go. Gotcha.
Nope. And they asked me to audition with them, and I was like, I don't, really? Okay.
Interesting.
And then I was like, I'll do it for them.
Interesting.
And so how many of them got on a team?
Ooh, this is another great one.
Tough one.
So Grant, Zach, and Jocelyn got on Herald Night.
Oh, right.
The other four of us put on Hoops, right. and Carrie McCrossin was just too bad to
right.
be on a team.
Right. I was in one of those scenarios, too, where
yeah.
eight
well, you
people
had put
auditioned.
Together your team.
I mean, eight people auditioned, and then six of them got on. And then the other one was me and Mike Lane, who were just like, nah, it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
great.
It was a terrible feeling.
Oh, I can't imagine. I mean, and then, yeah. The whole thing was weird.
Yeah. So
the team's name was Fleet Week, which I think is a great name.
I remember Fleet Week.
That's a good name.
You do?
I just remember when you guys were saying
from
you were
signing up.
Yeah, for signing up. I remember those signups.
Oh, the signups were stacked.
Go through everyone who signed up.
Oh, totally stacked. So you audition basically just like, I'm doing this for these people. You get on Hoops.
Yep.
And how was that? I mean, it's a new experience. Performing at the Beast is just no one knows how to
right,
do
and
it.
If you remember, the first Lloyd Nights had to be 20 minutes long.
Yeah, so there were no third beats. Like, everyone got
literally
to
second
group.
You wish.
Why was that?
I think it was just because of time restraint.
Yeah,
they were trying to have the show be an hour.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Who was on Hoops? We're not going to do the stack
James
thing.
McCarthy, Eric Gerson, Cassia Miller, Keisha Zolar. Dustin Drury
and
John Robert and Robert Cuthill.
It's totally stacked.
It sounded like nine people, but I think I just moved.
But then there's also
fast.
Well, Sarah Burton got added.
Right, because Cuthill left. Someone left.
No. Cassia got moved.
Cassia got moved. So how long were you on that? For 6 months?
6 months.
And how was that experience?
Fine, not great.
Right.
Wow.
I mean, yeah.
That was only 6 months?
Yeah, all those
Lloyd
teams.
The Lloyd
Knight
audiences
months.
Felt like Hoops had been there for way longer.
Yeah.
It wasn't good. It was weird, too, especially since half of us had auditioned to want to be on a team together.
Right,
and then Keisha, I already knew and liked a lot. Cuthill's hilarious. Dustin and JR had been around the indie scene forever, and it felt right. like this their moment. I don't know. On paper, it made sense. We like never had a regular coach for some reason. I think BSJ was the closest we had, but we had a ton of different people.
That's huge.
I remember just exhausting, horrible practices talking about pattern game. And eventually we told coaches, like sub-coaches, we don't want to hear about pattern game because we can't hear about the ninth different version of what's a good pattern game. Mm-hmm. It just wastes time.
Yeah.
Where was I when this was all happening?
You were like a baby.
Yeah, I don't think you were.
I was crushing it.
I mean, I would say... If you were available, you would have coached us at least once, even if you don't remember.
That's probably true.
So it was like, and it was just the beginning of Lloyd Night, and mm-hmm. no one really like knew what that was or like
why.
Yeah.
Wait, what happened after Hoops?
Got cut again.
So at this point, you've been on two house teams, and you've logged a total of 9 months.
You know it.
Caitlin, why the fuck did you audition again?
Rachel Mason convinced me to.
Interesting.
How did she convince you to?
She just was like, she's very optimistic and like very gregarious and just like was talking about like how fun it'll be. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, amnesia. I guess that's
so
like having a baby. They say you forget about the labor pain. So
yeah.
It's just
but
like,
this is also like you had a baby and then each time you didn't like the kid that much too.
I think that happens in real life.
Yeah, but then
I guess so, but then you stop having kids.
Yeah, but you gotta get rid of the kid after 3 months. It's a different
thing. That's what I've done.
You just get rid of the kid after 3 months. I don't like this kid.
Okay, what did she tell you?
Well, okay, also Hoops, I wasn't that upset when Hoops ended.
Gotcha. Because
it was tough.
It just wasn't a super fun team. And I, at that point, don't think I had done great work. And I was like, I don't know what an AD would do with me either. Like, I didn't feel hurt to be cut.
It wasn't
that time.
As bad. Yeah.
It didn't feel, because I was like, well, what team would I be on if I was on another team? And also, I was working a lot at that point. So I just didn't have time to think about it that much. Mm. And then
the next audition comes around and you audition again.
Fifth time, baby.
Rachel Mason.
Three for five.
Yeah, three for five is not bad.
That's not bad.
Hey, if you're looking for a coach for auditions.
Wait a minute. You've got on three times off of auditions?
That's also insane.
Maybe the record.
It has to be the record because who else has had to do it that many times?
You're looking at him.
Really?
But I got on the first time from being added.
And yeah, then, you were added mid.
But
I'm saying three
from,
successes out of five auditions. That's got to be unprecedented.
Well, I'll say me and Caitlin might be the only people that were on, and Jesse Lee were on Herald Night, Lloyd Night, then back to Herald Night.
Yes.
Matt Starr.
And Matt Starr. Right.
But it is an unusual story.
We're like
for
the
sure.
Five Timers Club.
In a weird,
the Three Timers Club. That's crazy. I didn't realize that was the second.
Rachel convinced me to do it, but I had a lot of trepidation, actually.
Right.
I was like, this is probably a bad idea. But, on some level, I thought, well, I won't get on, and that will be the end of it.
Right.
Ooh, boy.
You got on.
Then you get on to Apollo.
Yeah, which And I did immediately regret.
You did? You immediately regretted getting on a team.
I was just like, why did you do this again?
When they called you and said, you're on this team, you were like, what the fuck?
Right. And I was like,
because you're like, this might not be fun. I'm working. This could be stressful. I'm trying to save my marriage. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, because you'd been cut that second time, and that's not what he signed on for.
No. No.
He thought those days were over.
No. And that's the thing when you take those vows, is you have to
mean it.
I was just like, what and who?
Mm-hmm. Who's Sidney Hollis?
Did know who Sidney Hollis was. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. That I was like, Sidney Hollis.
Right.
I was like, all right. So Sid's been around for 3,000 years. Yeah. Never been on a good team. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be on the first good team together. Probs not. Mm-hmm. I knew who Sal and Brichette had both done Maude, and I knew them through that, though not well. Purcell and Martha, I knew their names.
Martha, you probably didn't know very well because she was just like fresh out of it. Like, she had just gone through the system.
And I think she'd just been put on the right?
She had just actually replaced Carrie McCross. And that's actually why I knew her name, just because I'm friends with Carrie.
Right.
And, spoiler, Carrie eventually gets on Airline.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I'll let her save that story. But, and then Brady and Brian, I'd never heard their names in my life.
And this is the audition where I audition with Brady and all these guys.
Yeah.
And at this point, I'm looking at Brady. I'm like, Brady's like, he's the greatest improviser. I mean,
he's
loved
so
Brady.
Good.
So I was like looking at this team being like, oh, this is going to be a fucking great team.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I had no idea anyone thought that.
Well, because I knew a few of them and I was like, this is going
to
be a good team.
To be honest, and I also thought they must be so disappointed to see my name. I really thought that just because if they know anything about my history, it couldn't feel good.
Do you think they saw that and they were like, oh, it's a bad team?
Or they're like, we got a couple months.
Purcell has said as much that he didn't have like great expectations for this team on another podcast. Sorry, guys.
Oh, wow.
Spoilers.
No, I mean, they probably actually didn't know that I'd been cut twice. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, if they did, I just thought, wow, it's such a bummer start to be like, we got this one.
So when did Apollo become something where you're like, oh, this is amazing?
First practice.
Wow, that early you knew it was different?
Well, I do look to authority, and Don really loved us. Mm. And he was our first coach in the first practice, and he asked to coach us permanently after that.
Cool.
And he coached you guys for most of the run, right?
On Lloyd. We were on Lloyd Knight for a year, and I think he did 9 months, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe 10.
Sometimes it takes someone. I mean, Don at that time was, I think, that's like, you certain times you can catch coaches in their, like, prime.
Yeah.
And that was Finelli in his prime with a team that would take his notes and do what he wanted. And I remember your guys' shows being good right off the bat.
Yeah.
Right? Like, first show was even a good show, I remember.
They were good. They were good right away. And it was just easy. And I wasn't, I think I was still, like, gun shy to get to know people, because I mean, I think I even like tweeted or something, put on Facebook, like, got on another house team, should be a fun 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
And so I just sort of like, you just wait for the other shoe to fall when you're me.
So what happens as you're approaching that 6 month mark and another round of auditions? Or did Apollo, was there no 6 month?
There was, I don't, is that when you got on?
Oh,
Musk?
I don't
yeah,
think
that would have
so.
Been Musk.
I think so.
Apollo was going on then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yep.
It was audition.
Big revival that came out of
it
Apollo.
It was invite only.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or did you know Apollo's good? We're probably fine.
I think at this time, Apollo had won Cage Match.
I don't remember if we had won at that point.
No.
I don't know if it was then or soon after.
Right.
I don't know. I actually don't remember thinking about it that much.
I think it
That's
was
great.
Right before auditions. Like, I think it was a thing where you guys were, like, winning, and it was like, oh, shit, can't break up Apollo.
Well, before we got moved to Herald Night, we
that
won.
Was, oh, okay. That
we
might
won,
have been the second time.
Yeah, I think Apollo's, like, I don't know. I'd have to ask Brian, but right. 4 and 3 or something. And we won, like, two times. We won 2 in a row.
So you guys had a pretty good run. And this is like the opposite of the other experiences you've had where it's like easy and good.
And you know what's funny? It was years after I had supposedly gotten over to my own account, the idea of like social promotion or like looking at other people's paper as right. far as like what they were doing. But I really felt it on Apollo. I never thought about being moved to Herald Night. Not once.
Right.
It was not something I wanted.
You just wanted to play on this team.
Yes. Absolutely. There was no allure to being on a team that wasn't Apollo at that time.
And then you do that for a year.
Yeah.
You guys start working on some, like, more organic trend. Like, you guys are doing some, like, pretty lofty stuff for Lloyd Knight at the time. I think that was around where they were allowed to stop doing pattern game, right?
Yeah.
And you guys were doing just sort of straight-up organics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you guys had a great run. And we started to win Cage Match. And a year later... get moved to Herald Night.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? I don't think we've talked to anyone. There's only been 2 teams.
It was...
Is there a ton of pressure or is it business as usual?
I don't think there's a ton of pressure. I do think you have to readjust a little bit. It's a little different audience. Just, I think, different stage.
Yeah.
I think the physical stuff is different.
Do you think... Oh, go.
No, go ahead.
Do you think a good team is a good team, or do you think the things that make a good Herald Knight show can be different than what makes a good Lloyd Knight show?
I think a good team's a good team, pretty much.
To me, I felt like seeing Apollo on the Herald Knight stage. First of all, they had done Cage Match, so they had performed there a few times.
Yeah, and there used to be the Lloyd Knight Herald,
and you guys did a good job with it, I would remember.
I think so.
I guess just my question is, it feels like maybe there's a ton of pressure. Because I think people who don't get moved up from Lloyd Knight are looking at you guys as like, why is this team so good? And like, you know, other Herald teams might be looking at you as like, why is this team? You know, it just seems like a target,
oh,
a big
yeah.
target.
Oh, yeah. We just like hated those people, though. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like,
because you guys were so close.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I guess.
You're not the type of person to let that kind of thing, I think. Get to.
I just wasn't even that aware of it if it was happening.
Right.
I mean, I remember that day that we found out that we were moved up. Like, we were hoping that That had been something we had spoken about, right. Though not a ton, and certainly not a lot before.
Probably more people outside of your team talking about it than you.
Yeah, and we talked about it right before, like, shakeups, but not, like, it wasn't like 3 months before someone was talking about that. And the day we were the last people told what was going on with us.
I kind of knew immediately when, like, every other Lloyd team had heard something, and I was, like, asking around, and no one from Apollo had heard anything. I was like, oh, they're going to move.
That's what, and I was texting with Lauren Adams, like, all day about different shakeup stuff, and she was like, well, this means you guys are moving, Gerald. And I was like, well, I don't know. Maybe don't say that. Yeah. Like, or it doesn't. But I remember hearing, like, Hartney had been moved up individually, and other people like that, and I was like, that is weird. It was great.
How was that experience on Herald Night with this team?
Great. I'm trying to, yeah, I don't know. It was awesome. We did the organic stuff for a while after that. But then, what opening did we do at the end? Anyone remember?
Tweet at us if you figure out. Do you have a standout moment? What was your favorite moment on Herald Night with that first team that you're really fucking loving?
There was a show, we tried to do a lot of like cool transitions or have like a framework for the show. And one was like Brady was kind of like a banjo playing like narrator. So he would like tell us what was going to happen next. That was really cool. We had another group game where like, we were talking about street Jenga and like playing Jenga on the streets. And like, I think I initiated that, but then I was like so amazed by like, we just did a movie trailer like so quickly. And I was like, how did people think of that? Like, yeah. I had the advantage of being the person that initiated it.
And you just watched it happen before you.
Yeah, and I was like, great. That's what I was thinking, guys. Good work.
Wasn't there another thing with like human dominoes or something? I had a student tell me
something.
I missed
that show, but yes.
Oh, there was something
but
about
But I think
dominoes.
That was a supposedly amazing show.
Yeah. Well.
There was a lot of physical stuff, yeah, in general.
Do you think Apollo changed you as an improviser at all?
I mean, I'm sure. I mean, I feel like...
Are there things, like areas of growth you wouldn't have necessarily expected or things that you now feel more comfortable with that you weren't?
Hard to say because it's so long ago that we started,
right?
But, I mean, trust, I think, on stage... Like, when you really trust someone, what's possible? It doesn't mean I trust everyone on stage equally. Right. I wish I did, but...
Right. But when you do trust, things yes. can happen that are, yes. like, surprising yes. to even you. So, Apollo was great. I mean, they're a team that I think had a very specific voice due to, especially some of that coaching of Don and whoever.
And then Kate was our coach. So, and that's,
some
like...
strong voices.
Don, like, recommended way. Kate. So it was sort of a...
Continuation.
Yeah, continuation.
When that... ended, were you expecting it? Was it something that you were, was this another big like, oh, this isn't great? Or what was your thoughts on
that? I wasn't expecting it. I thought, yeah, I wasn't. I didn't think it was
impossible.
Yeah. It seemed on the table, but not definite. And I don't know if it was. Like, I mean, I think it was just a choice that
you didn't think you were getting cut.
Didn't know. We got an email pretty quickly that no one was going to get cut. So
right.
That was one indication that I wasn't. Except for Caitlin.
They're like, except for Caitlin, who we have to keep the pattern.
I mean,
going.
I would understand that. That's pattern. That's heightening.
That is
That's
how
heightening.
You play the game. I have just some real quick hypotheticals.
Yes.
So I had I have these listeners email questions. I don't get their names, but basically one of these questions is...
Wait, you don't get their names?
I do, but should I turn my phone on and find it? Okay, I'll do it.
Could just write it down beforehand.
I know, I just didn't. I was
you
so excited.
You wrote down a bunch of stuff. What did you write down?
I just wrote...
It's all that goddamn
some...
cold open.
Okay,
that,
here
you
we
wrote
go.
Wrote down the idea for like cold open.
No, it's not the cold open. Shh, quiet.
Yes, it is.
Here's the listener. His name is Cameron Azarm. And the question is, what's the biggest thing you've learned from sketch that helps you with improv and vice versa? Is there one thing that you take in both sort of fields?
Well, I would like to think this has helped me as an improviser. It's certainly helped me as a critic of other improvisers. Mm-hmm. But staging, I think.
Interesting.
As far as coming from sketch and coming from a discipline where you have time to think about where everyone's going to land, I think, like, I don't like seeing beat after beat of the same two spots being
two
filled.
Chairs or yeah. two people standing yes. or two people on the opposite ends of the stage.
Yes, yes. It bugs me, and especially bugs me in group games. So it's something that I try to be better at because of an awareness that looks bad.
Right.
And it's,
that's kind of from like a director's standpoint.
Yeah, it is more director than writer.
That's
for
interesting.
Sure. For sure.
Because it's not something we focus on too often, right? Staging or stage picture. I mean, it's something
stage
we
picture.
Mention, but we don't. There's no real strategy on what to do.
Nope.
Or,
no. And if you don't, if that helps, like if you come from a theater background, you can be like, right, stage picture. Mm-hmm. But if you don't at all, it means nothing.
All I know is don't put my back to the audience.
Yep.
That's the only
right.
thing I worry
yeah.
about.
And you do see that even
yeah.
on Harold.
Yeah, you see that. Yeah.
But yeah, but I mean, it does. I mean, that's something I learned from Neil. It's like, do one thing on stage right and another stage left. It's that simple. It makes the show a lot better. It makes it a lot more dynamic. And people, both your fellow improvisers and the audience, can tell the difference between the scenes mm-hmm. more easily. Mm.
Is your understanding of game the same? Like, if you were explaining game to a sketch student or an improv student, would you have to frame it differently too much? Or
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. And I think, like, from improv, just like it could be that funny in 2.5 minutes. Like, a sketch doesn't have to be 5 minutes long.
Right. Editing. Do you coach improv at all, or
mm-hmm.
do you
yeah.
how do you feel about that as opposed to like noting sketches, or do you have a strategy or philosophy you go with?
Well, for me, it's a lot harder. Coaching is a lot harder than directing to me. But I like coaching like 301 practice groups or like a team that wants to work on a new form. I like to have some sort of agenda that
yeah.
they want to do. What I mostly do is mm-hmm. groups of people that just are like, we're here. And I don't know. I should have a better plan for when that happens, because
yeah.
it happens almost every time. But that's really difficult for me to like sort of generate out of nowhere a curriculum for
you
these 3 hours.
You need goals. You're a person that needs goals, Caitlin.
I guess so.
That's my generalization
All
about
right.
you.
I'll take it.
Because I just, you're a person who thrives on those goals. You're talking about like having to, you know, create a process where like, oh, this person's depending on me to do this, and then
yeah.
you just get it done. So like, I could see that as like an issue where it's like, hey, we just want to work on getting better. And you're like, what does that even mean?
Well, it's fine, but I just don't, and I can do that. It's just like, I don't know if, I can't help but wonder, are you frustrated at the end of this?
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Because as far as getting better, I mean, that's not a goal that you can really
yeah,
just put out
yeah.
there. Like,
and
we just want to get better.
I wonder how much the Apollo sort of thing definitely helped that. Because Don probably had goals. And
yes,
like, you guys stuck to those
for
goals.
Sure.
And you guys came together on it. Sorry, I interrupted you, Nicole.
No,
you
were saying
that. So you are coaching 301 practice groups. So if anyone wants to email
I would
you.
Love to coach your 301 practice group.
Okay, great, great, great.
Hypotheticals.
Yeah, yeah. You got one, Nicole?
No.
Oh, great. Well,
is that your new tagline?
Yep.
Her new tagline is no on the improv podcast. Well, Caitlin, I feel like we could keep talking to you forever about your...
Wait, you said you had hypotheticals.
I asked one, and then that was it.
That's
it was
not a hypothetical. That's just a question.
The hypothetical was... Jesus, Nicole, this is insane.
Don't
Ben,
get
what's
mad.
Going on here?
Don't
you know
mad.
What? I'm Gallaghering.
You can't Gallagher.
I'm
Gallaghering
my own podcast.
You can't Gallagher your own podcast.
No, I'm saying the hypothetical was like if you're explaining game to a sketch student or an improv
student.
Oh,
that was your hypothetical.
What's the
okay,
difference?
That's fair. That's fair. That's fair.
Don't.
I forgot that happened.
Me and Nicole have to have a talk off air. quitting the podcast, by the way.
Oh, God.
Because these kind of arguments, if we're not getting enough likes and 5-star ratings on iTunes, I can't keep doing this. Am I right, Caitlin?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Oh, wait. Before we go, let's talk about the female gaze real quick.
Yeah.
This is like a sort of a hybrid show, half sketch, half improv, right? Can you talk about that for just a little bit?
Yeah. Oh, I would love to.
All right. That's female enough. We're going to keep. I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God.
That was a joke. Continue.
Don't look at me for help.
Help me, please.
No, Caitlin looked at me.
Okay.
Let's both look at Nicole. Female gaze is a parody of The View, The Chew. Talk mm-hmm. and The Real, all of which are panel talk shows, mostly featuring women.
All those shows are kind of a parody of The View. And then you're parodying the parody in a way.
That's probably accurate.
It's insane.
We aim to have at least 15 co-hosts per show. One time we had 11. That was embarrassing. we just basically do The View. We have hot flashes up top, which are mimicking the hot topics. Mm-hmm. And then we have a guest and sometimes another segment. And it's a joy.
Pretty much improvised, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, we make a PowerPoint ahead of time with, like, the topics.
Right.
And that's it. And then everyone has a character game.
Right.
So I'm a conspiracy theorist that believes the government killed Aaliyah. And
so that comes up a lot, I'm sure.
Very specific.
You'd be surprised
how
often it
can come up. If I've heard some of them, they're all very specific.
Lydia Hensler plays a former child background artist. Glow just keeps it real.
So this is a show with 15 people on stage basically riffing.
Yes.
And I have not seen the show yet, but from what I'm told, it's like insanely coherent for the
yes,
amount of people on
yes.
stage.
It's co-created and produced by Janie Stiller and Naomi Rege, and we meet and yeah. We put in, like, it's never scripted as far as, like, here's your line. Occasionally we'll put in a joke that we are forcing everyone to cooperate with. Like, we had a story about Maya Angelou was misquoted on her U.S. stamp. So we just started talking about how great Maya Angelou was in Blossom and how she should never be forgotten. And you were only allowed to speak on that topic if you were willing to confuse Maya Angelou and Maya Bialik.
That's funny.
You weren't allowed to have any other opinion on it.
That's really funny.
But then other times it's just like, yeah, we'll talk about like Hillary running for president and everyone says like their thing. Lauren Adams is our resident conservative. Mm. She talks about her husband, Todd, who may or may not be homosexual.
This feels like an interesting realm for you because it is a very, it's like a hybrid of sketch and improv.
It is like everything that I've done at UCB yeah. together because it is like pop culture, it's improv, it's sketch, it's political, mm-hmm. it's women stuff.
Yeah.
We had Gary Richardson as our first guest because he was on a commercial that was featured in The Bachelor.
So you just brought him
in. So we just asked him about that. And he had no idea, really, that his commercial had aired during The Bachelor. And then I contacted his co-star from that commercial, who was Peter McInerney. Mm-hmm. Peter McInerney, and got him to record. This was based on something I saw on The Talk, where Roseanne was a guest and they had Laurie Metcalf record a message for her. So I had Peter McInerney record a message for
That's
Gary Richardson.
So funny.
Gary was so confused because he was like, I only met that guy that one day. We're like, no, you're best friends.
That's so funny.
So we're the first Wednesdays of the month at Chelsea.
That sounds like an absolute blast. The mix of sketch and improv.
Yeah, and it's really fun because we have very veteran people as well as this is some people's first show at UCB. Yeah. So
well, I'll say
generational mix.
This show is sort of a microcosm of Caitlin Bitsagai, the Caitlin Taggarts of the world. The mix of sketch and improv and, man, I didn't realize that your improv journey has been so long, but, you know, now you're at the top of the
now
mountain.
Now it's over.
Now it's over. And we'll sail you out to sea. But thank you so much for being a guest, Caitlin. Amazing writer, amazing improviser.
Thank you for having me.
We could talk to you forever. Maybe we'll bring you back just to talk more about your friend from sketch class. We'll have a whole episode where we just...
I would love to come in here with Frank and my file.
We'll make that happen.
We're not going to make that happen.
I'm making it. Listen, I'm quitting. If these things don't start happening, I'm quitting.
I'm taking off my headphones.
I have to remember what I can't. I don't. How long have we been here? I remember telling that story like 3 days ago.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversation podcast. If you haven't already subscribed, go ahead and do that. And you can also go to iTunes and leave a rating or review. That would really help us out. In the future, if you want to ask us questions or ask questions to our guests, you can follow us on Twitter at UCB Convo and look for postings there on future guests and future activity. Guys, I'm feeding the nerds left and right. We'll see you next week.